Blog Talk Radio.
Particular show, you have James Bell as the host. Yes, I do host the Boxing Source radio show live on Sundays on this particular channel. But you had me on here on Wednesday to talk some football. And if you want to join in, you could call 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on the queue. You'll be able to talk some football live. We got a good number of things to cover within this particular show, as we had a very busy weekend in college football and in the NFL, and we're going to go through as much of it as possible here within this time frame, as y'all want to cover as much as I possibly can in the live segment before we get into overtime, if we do go into overtime with this particular show. But, of course, we had a lot of key games on both sides with college football and the NFL, and so we wanted to get into it a little bit and tackle what happened in most of the feature games that were on Saturday and Sunday and also Monday night. So first off, want to get into the college football thing here, as you know, wanted to touch on first what happened before the weekend and then go into the weekend. So we had like the college football playoff top 25 released. That was on Tuesday. They had it, you know, in a special on ESPN between the two feature games that happened there in college basketball, with four the four top teams featured for that particular doubleheader. So you had these playoff rankings released, and I just wanted to, you know, go through, you know, I would say the actually, I'll go through, you know, the 25 teams basically, going from 25 on up. So you had leading off at 25, you had Southern Methodist University, SMU, there who, you know, only had one loss. Coming up to that particular point, that did, you know, lose recently before this Saturday's, you know, this weekend's games went through. So SMU opened there at 81. You know, Navy was 24. Then Oklahoma State, Boise State, and Memphis there who, you know, was also part of the AAC. And so you had Memphis, Navy, and SMU, you know, was part of the bottom five teams in the top 25. I mean, you had Memphis, who did defeat SMU in that feature game in the previous weekend on Saturday Night Football on ABC. And that was, you know, one of those feature games where you had a lot of points scored. Offense was, you know, going crazy on both, you know, both teams. And it kind of, you know, looked like the game that they had in the AEC a couple of years ago between South Florida and Central Florida, when, you know, Central Florida was able to figure out a way to get through that game and win that damn game. Of course, y'all know I hate UCF. But, you know, still, it was one of the better games of the year that happened. Here you just have the kind of like the same thing happened here with the American Athletic Conference in that previous week. So that is 21, you know, that was 21 to 25 there from the previous week. Then following that up, you still had another team in the American Athletic Conference in Cincinnati was at 20. Then you have Wake Forest, Iowa, Minnesota, and Kansas State. So 16 is Kansas State, 17 was Minnesota, 18th was Iowa, 19th was Wake Forest, and 20th is Cincinnati. So you had another AAC team there, this time within the top 20. Two Big Ten teams with Minnesota and Iowa. You had Wake Forest there at that time at 7-1. And then at number 16 was Kansas State, put at 16 to open due to their win over Oklahoma that happened that particular weekend. So that was 16 through 20. Now 11 through 15 includes Auburn, Baylor, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Notre Dame. Think there you have, you know, Auburn that, you know, was in the SEC, had two losses, one to, you know, Florida inexplicably, you know, but then had a, you know, another loss to LSU by 3 points. So they, you know, had those two conference losses there in the SEC. You have them followed by Baylor, who was there at 8-0, Wisconsin at 6-2. Of course, you know, they lost to Illinois and then got blown out by Ohio State. Michigan, they're at 7-2, you know, losing to Wisconsin and then having that close loss to Penn State where they weren't able to necessarily come back and tie that game, failing to convert on, I think, fourth and goal for Penn State to hold on to win at Penn State. And then Notre Dame, 6-2, who did lose to Michigan and pretty much got blown out by Michigan over in the Big House. So that was 11 through 15. So now you had 6 through 10 at that particular week, which was Georgia, then Oregon, followed by Utah, Oklahoma, and the team that shouldn't have been in the top 10, the Florida Gators. I don't know why these people think that Florida is the top 10 team. They suck. All right. That's pretty much all I got to say about that. Oklahoma, of course, lost on the road to Kansas State. That's why they opened it that particular week at number 9. You have Utah. They had the lone loss to USC. Oregon, they had the lone loss at the beginning of the season to Auburn. And then Georgia, who had their loss to South Carolina, but ended up, you know, beating the crap out of Florida. Sorry, Bynes. So there you have 6 through 10. Now, going through that top 5, of course, going backwards this time, opening with number 5, Clemson, and number 4, Penn State, number 3, Alabama, number 2, LSU, and number 1, Ohio State. Now, at that particular time, I didn't understand why Clemson was there at number 5, but, you know, at that particular time after they released those rankings, I was like, you know what, it doesn't matter because you have, first, you had all 4 teams that were above Clemson. They were going to play each other, first with the LSU and Alabama, and then with the Ohio State and Penn State. So one way or another, 2 of those teams were going to fall below Clemson as long as Clemson stayed undefeated there. So, yeah, Penn State at number 4, you know, had their wins against Michigan. And, you know, like I said, that Michigan game that they won at home, and they did defeat Iowa in that previous week. So that is how they, you know, basically had that number 4 ranking. Number 3, Alabama. I mean, it was Alabama. So they were going to find a way to put them within the top 4 regardless. Number 2, LSU at that time was, to me, the most impressive team up to this particular point of the season. Had at least two key wins in their schedule. To me, up to that particular point, had that most impressive win in the country up to that point when they went on the road to Austin and defeated Texas in a pretty good game as far as like offense was concerned, winning 45-38 over Texas, and then defeating Florida when Florida got some inexplicable, you know, number 7 ranking at that particular time. And then also defeating Auburn, who was there as the top 10 team at home. So you had 3 top 10 wins pretty much as far as like the AP and the coaches poll from LSU, which made them have, the most impressive list of wins up to that particular point. So that's why they were there at number 2. Number 1 was Ohio State. At that particular time was 8-0, and did have that blowout win over Wisconsin before, going into these top 25 rankings. So that's where they had Ohio State at number 1 at that particular point. So there was that opening college football playoff top 25 for that first week. Now, now we could go into the games that happened in week 11. Of course, starting off with the game that a lot of people were looking forward to, game that, you know, a lot of people felt that would have been a game between the top two teams in the country, in LSU and Alabama. You know, I said that you had LSU as probably the top team in the country. Like I said, they had the most impressive wins up to that particular point. That is, you know, why I had LSU, pretty much had LSU as my top team. Then Alabama was a little bit, a couple of spots up below that. So that's where I had that at. But I'm going to see if we could get a caller in here real quick. I'm going to see if I get their information. 773, you're on Take This Hell. What's good?
What's going on, James, in Chi-Town, man?
Hey, brother, Chi-Town, man. Long time. How's it been, brother?
I've been all right, brother, man. I'm glad to be back, you know. Just talk about this football, you know what I'm saying? Go Tigers!
We had a good game, and we were able to stop Alabama when we needed to and get the key win. Now we got to look forward to the next game. Go Tigers!
We got a good Cajun style, you know what I'm saying? Do it like that. We didn't beat Alabama. Then we had, you know, as the boys do it, had that rest, do that thing, and probably for like 48 hours, then on to the next.
I was going to, you know, go through this particular game. And, I felt that it looked like it was going to be a blowout. In the first half, you had the LSU offense clicking very well in the first half, particularly in the second quarter, where they scored 23 points on Alabama, and they had that 33-13 lead after halftime. And you know, I kind of like thought it would be, you know, basically a blowout, but you know, then they seemed like they got a little bit conservative in the third quarter. It wasn't like Joe Burrow was, you know, messing up or anything like that. It was just that, you know, they had short passes and I guess they had like nothing really, you know, getting very far from the line of scrimmage. So that's how Alabama was able to, you know, get back in the game slowly. They did score like one touchdown there. In the third quarter, and it was, you know, at the end of the third quarter, you know, it still was 33-20. So it was still like a two-score game, but you didn't necessarily have, you know, LSU really, you know, take that game and make it an absolute blowout or whatever it was in the third quarter. So kind of like gave Alabama a chance there in that particular instance. And then the thing about it was in the fourth quarter, you had, you know, Alabama, you know, get back into it. Najee Harris scored another touchdown in the second half that made the game pretty much a 6-point game. But then, you know, you had LSU kind of like not make it, you know, any closer than around 6 to 5 points, because, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was able to score a touchdown 4 minutes later, and then it took another 5 minutes for Alabama to score again, but the defense just could not stop Clyde Edwards-Helaire as he was able to score another touchdown, you know, in that fourth quarter. So he finished with 3 rushing touchdowns and 103 yards rushing against Alabama. And, you know, it, even though you had on the other side Tua Tagovailoa playing this game and had 418 yards passing and 4 touchdowns, he had just about a little bit over than a 50% connection or completion percentage, 21 of 40. For 418 yards, and Najee Harris had 146 yards rushing, but still that wasn't enough to have them overtake LSU as LSU won 46-41. And it was just a very impressive performance for the LSU offense. Joe Burrow, 31 for 39, 393 yards and 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. And Ja'Marr Chase led the team in receiving with 140 yards. So, you know, that was like, you know, after LSU had those, you know, impressive wins over Florida and Auburn and Texas, this is, you know, their most impressive win that they've, you know, had in a while. And remember, they've lost, what, 8 straight to Alabama before this game? And so them, you know, being able to, you know, get this win has, you know, really boosted them. And that's what made them become the new number one in the college football playoff rankings that came out yesterday. So what did you think about LSU's performance, you know, particularly in the first half and then them being able to close it out in the fourth quarter?
I was going to say, I mean, I pick Alabama to win that game, to be honest with you, because the experience, you know, Toy, you know, I thought he had the experience, you know, he won the national championship, so I was going to say go with them knowing it was going to be close. But shoot, we all know LSU always had talent. It was just, you know, on both sides, it's just they never had the quarterback, you know what I'm saying, when Les Miles was there. Because it was a team, like, possibly if they would have had a quarterback and had, you know, some more creativity on offense, you know, with the quarterback, they probably could have got Alabama years ago, you know, even when Nick Saban got there. Just that's just bone. They've been their main hiccup. They just never really had a quarterback. Now they finally has something with Joe Burrow. So, I mean, I think LSU now and how things going forward now, they're a team that might be Alabama's, you know, equal in the SEC West now, finally. You know, they have a rival in their same division. Because, man, that's big. I think they're going to definitely get some recruits out of that, how they came in and, you know, beat Alabama, you know. But it just, you know, that was a heck of a game.
Yeah, it was great little matchup there between those two teams, and, you know, LSU being able to, you know, pull it out, kind of like makes them the, you know, prohibitive favorites to win the SEC. At least they're, you know, leading the SEC West with this particular win. So, kind of like, I have to see what they do here from this point forward to see if they'll be able to stay undefeated, then get to the SEC championship game. And then if they win that, then they'll be a shoo-in to be one of the 4 teams in the college football playoff. Their last 3 games are not against any ranked team in the SEC, so they should be able to get through that particular schedule. Seeing if I could get this color in here from the 219, you're on Take This L Football Talk Show. What's good?
How you doing, man? Hey, my whole thing is I want to talk about this situation. I want to address this situation, this quarterback situation in Chicago. I'm a Bears fan, and it's clearly that they have a quarterback situation going on right now. And the talk is trade for Cam Newton, but I thought the trade deadline was over. But my thing is, I don't want Cam Newton. But in his defense, if Cam Newton is 100%, I mean, he's an MVP, made the Super Bowl, that's fine. I can accept that. But the person I really want is Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater is younger.
Yeah.
His resume speaks for itself. He's got a lot of wins. Well, he's got some wins. He's done some things without Drew Brees. So I would go after Teddy Bridgewater. He's going to win a lot of money. Bears can pay him. And he could be the quarterback of the future. Who knows?
I'm with Cat. I disagree, man. Bridgewater, I mean, he had an injury in Minnesota. I think, to me, he's, you know, it's kind of Teddy Bridgewater got a big decision to make, but I think career-wise, I think he's in the perfect situation with New Orleans. I still think he's kind of a system. I think he fits with Sean Payton. I don't know if he's going to be the same with the Bears. And, you know, Cam Newton, I mean, really, if say the Bears, you know, of course, I'm a diehard Bears fan. You know, is this Sean?
I know, Mike. I know. Yeah, it's me. Yeah, Mike.
What's going on, Sean? What's going on, man? But, I mean, Cam Newton, forget he got to the Super Bowl with Carolina, and I just think it's a change of scenery for him. And I knew it was going to be a problem when I heard that Cam Newton had his foot injury in preseason. I like, man, Carolina, I'm like, yeah, he gonna have it. He ain't going to make it. And turn out it's more to it. And I know Jamal was saying that he think it was more the last year where he should have been not playing. I just think it needs a change of scenery. And I think Matt Nagy probably can, you know, we got weapons, you know, receivers and probably got to get another running back. I mean, I like Montgomery, but I think we got the weapons for Cam Newton with the Bears.
No, they need
Cam
tight end. They need a tight end, too.
Yeah, we need a tight end, too. I don't think Burton's the guy, man. I mean, it's been now three, you know, I don't think he's going to have the year, 3 years he had in Philly, because this is his second year with the Bears. So that was 3 years ago what he did in Philly. So I don't, they might need to move on from him. But I'm with Cam, man. I'm not sold on Bridgewater to be the starter for the Bears.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, like, real quick on that, because you have Cam Newton, and he had that injury in the preseason. They really didn't, you know, diagnose it well, or he didn't think that he would be that bad as far as, like, his overall condition is with his leg and whatnot. But going into that previous season, I mean, they had started out 6-2 and then ended up losing 6 of the last 8. So
– exactly.
and you still had Cam Newton there as your quarterback. So, and Cam Newton has been like a much maligned player here in the history of the Take This L Football Talk Show, in that he's, you know, able to be like a mobile quarterback. But when you're not able to be as mobile as you usually are, you have to rely on your arm. And he's not very accurate with that arm. So once you take away that mobility part of his game, he's pretty much an average quarterback at best. That's why when they had him out, basically had him out for this particular season, and they put in Allen, and Allen was able to do what he fully is capable to do, then that offense clicked like it usually clicked when Cam Newton was at full strength. You were able to, you know, use McCaffrey the way that you want to. You were able to use the receivers that you want to. You were able to utilize Greg Olsen like, you know, the Greg Olsen that we know. So that's how they were able to have that, you know, hot streak when they did.
But still, with Cam Newton,
if he's not at 100%, then they're pretty much predictable.
That's the whole problem.
Like,
you don't know.
Like, my thing with the NFL is I don't like the Bucks. I think the Bucks are like a very, very overrated team. And they couldn't beat the Bucks at home. And then they had that fourth down play where they were near the goal line, and Cam Newton was a non-factor. So the defense, all the defense had to do was focus on McCaffrey. When you have that type of an offense where you can predict mostly what that offense can do, you got to be able to take out, you know, what the non-factor is. And that was Cam Newton at that time because he was not at full strength. And I'm like, they knew it, but they didn't want to just flat out take him out. So they, you know, he basically took out himself in that instance. And right now, I just think that he's not the guy in Carolina anymore because he just cannot be able to perform at his full potential there. He has to have a change of scenery. I don't know if Chicago is that particular team, though. And I wouldn't take if his contract is still, you know, on the books, I wouldn't take on that contract compared to Teddy Bridgewater.
I just wouldn't. You know, he has, I mean, Cam Newton has more wear and tear in his body than Teddy Bridgewater has.
That's what I was just telling Mike. I told Mike that on Facebook earlier, like, Teddy Bridgewater is, he's younger, less wear and tear. It seems like he's the type of quarterback that Matt Nagy, like, his whole offensive system, that's what he likes to do. You know what I'm saying? He's mobile. He's younger. My whole thing is he's younger and just less wear and tear.
Well, he's mobile. He's younger and less wear and tear. And, you know, the thing about Teddy Bridgewater, even in Minnesota was, I mean, he's not the, you know, the overly dynamic player that a Cam Newton was or like Lamar Jackson is right now. But he was able to be successful in Minnesota because what Minnesota had then was still, and they still have now at this particular point, is a stingy defense. And when you have a stingy defense, you don't have to be a quarterback that wants to make the big play. All you have to do is make the right play. And once you make the right play,
manage the game.
And that's basically what Teddy Bridgewater
did. That's what Chicago does. And that's what
you're messing us up right now. I agree. That's what's messing us up right now.
And that's what Chicago does. That's what they did when they had that Super Bowl run. Stingy defense, make the right play. You don't try to blow it because man, Rex Grossman or I don't like Rex Grossman. That's going back in the days of the Florida Gators and all that. So I mean, come on. As long as you just make the safe play. Make the right play and don't turn the ball over. Then
exactly.
Should be good.
Don't turn the ball over. Don't turn the ball over because they got the defense. They got the defense to actually get to the Super Bowl. But it's just it's just the signal caller that's a problem.
Yeah,
but they
got to
find that one person.
I mean, how's that running back situation looking? Because I haven't really like caught up with them or whatnot. But I thought, I thought they had like a solid starter at running back. But it's kind of been like wishy washy. I think.
I like David Montgomery.
Me too.
You think though? Because I know they was talking about Howard. You think, Sean? You think we made a mistake trading Jordan Howard though? And we didn't get as much for him. You think we should have kept Jordan? So some people. That we should have kept him.
Yeah, because you had Montgomery, you had Howard, and you got a guy from A&T out there, Cohen.
Tariq Cohen. I was telling Kelly Mike, I don't think Tariq Cohen's every down back. He's one of those
special plays and stuff
like that.
He's not going to
be that bell carrier back, that we need, especially now it's going to get cold now, He's not going to be that guy,
That's why they got rid of Jordan Howard because Jordan Howard really didn't fit what Matt Nagy was trying to do. You know what I'm saying? Because I mean, in all actuality, he can't catch. He can't catch, and Matt Nagy needs one of those running backs who can catch. And David Montgomery can catch.
Mm-hmm.
He can catch, but at the same time, they missed one of those typical. Traditional Bears running backs in Jordan Howard who runs straight up, and that's what he does, and that's why he's been successful in Philadelphia because he's just a strong runner, and that's what Chicago has had in the past is somebody who just runs straight up, but the problem was that he didn't fit the system because he just wasn't a good receiver.
Yeah. Like you said, Nagy, I guess, didn't fit with Nagy's system.
Yeah, but what they're missing is a tight end. I would have I heard a rumor about them trying to trade for Tyler Eifert from Cincinnati. That would have been a good trade. Mm. That would have been a good pickup.
He might be available this offseason because I think Cincinnati, they're going to probably make some changes because, you know, Dalton, they probably going to move on, draft a quarterback, try to get rid of him. And then, shit, I think Jamal was saying A.J. Green was going to be traded to Buffalo, but that never happened. You never know. A.J. Green could be, you know, on the market. So they probably, I mean, because they're going to have probably the number one or number two. They probably going to have the number one pick because the way it's looking, they still haven't won a game yet.
Yeah, so, but the tight end position is what they're really missing right now because Adam Shaheen hasn't done anything. Trey Burton hasn't done anything, and they were saying how Mitchell Trubisky—that's what he really needs right now. Those little checkdowns, those little short checkdowns to the tight end. But the tight end has been non-productive all year.
Yeah, they were talking about Pace, how he missed on Kettle. The stud tight end for the 49ers, we could have got him. We took Shaheen, you know.
That's another miss.
He missed
on, you know. Yeah, tight end position has been something that they've really needed this year, and they've just been really non-productive at that position.
Yeah. We got the receivers, man. I was saying get the Bears offense ain't shit, but we do got receivers, though. I mean, we got some deep receivers. But we don't have a tight end, and like you said, and the quarterback play has been, you know, abysmal, and then the offensive line is hanging in, but still, it's still mostly the quarterback play, though.
Yep. We fell. So, us as Bears fans, we fell for the banana in the tailpipe. But
and I feel you about your business, Sean. I was clamoring that day. I wanted Deshaun Watson. I said, everybody. I wanted Deshaun Watson. I did not want Trubisky. I mean, I had to be supportive of it. Even Dez Clark. I met Dez Clark. And I was asking Dez Clark, how you feel, you know what I'm saying? It is what it is. I mean, because I told him, like, I wanted, you know, the Bears. You know, I'm a diehard Bears fan. I wanted, you know, Deshaun Watson. But, you know, shit, we got to support. Like, yeah, but, you know, but all I told him, I wanted Watson. I seen greatness in him. And we could have had him, you know what I'm saying? This is one of those, like, man. He's still gonna be scratching their head.
I didn't understand what they saw in Trubisky that made them go with that as a top pick. But you also it's also like how the Giants picked Daniel Jones this year, like coming from Duke, and you're like, I mean, it wasn't like he was tearing things up at Duke. So why would you put him, you know, draft him at number six? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
you drafted.
That's
kind of
like what
you
got going on there. And but real quick before I get back, college football joint, you were talking about the Bears, you know, lineup there on offense at tight end. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what they have at tight end because Burton is, you know, not 100%. And then behind him is like I have no idea who these guys are behind them.
Shaheen, who was our second round pick two years ago. Yeah. We don't, like the tight end thing, like the time I was saying, is we don't have no really a tight end.
Yeah.
And all these offensive lines, they got
two linemen on injured reserve, so they got to deal with depth on the offensive line. So, you know, that's something that they're going to have to deal with here as they get through the second half of the NFL season. Getting back to the thing on college football, I was talking about the LSU-Alabama game with LSU's impressive win. They're in Tuscaloosa, so they are now the, like, new number one team in the college football playoff. Dropped Alabama to number five, which is no surprise because it's Alabama. one way or another, they're going to try to get Alabama back in that college football playoff.
No doubt.
And it won't be, and I would not be surprised if they would try to have LSU play Alabama again in the college football playoff. So
I would love to see that. I would love to see that. Or Clemson.
I can see that.
I'd rather see LSU Clemson somehow, some way. We've seen Alabama Clemson for four consecutive years. And I guess some people would probably want to see something else. We don't want to have a college football equivalent to the Golden State Warriors against the Cleveland Cavaliers. So No. So that's what we had on that. But before that game took place over in Tuscaloosa, there was a little upset in the top 25 is Penn State fell to Minnesota over in Minnesota. And that was like a eye-opener right there for me to see that, you know, P.J. Fleck was able to get that Minnesota team to, you know, defeat Penn State. But I think, you know, Chi-Town, if you were following, you know, like the chat, you know, where we were saying like Penn State is not, you know, completely a dominant type of team to be, you know, in the top four in the college football playoff. It's not like they really, you know, blow out teams or anything like that, with the exception of that Maryland game. So you had Sean Clifford there in Penn State struggling, 23 of 43 for 340 yards and three interceptions. While Tanner Morgan kind of like played semi-conservative and had, you know, his receivers do the work for him, 18 of 20 for 339 yards, with Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson having 307 of those yards. So two receivers with 307 yards. So they were like killing Penn State DBs in this particular game. But Minnesota was able to get the win 31-26 and defeat then the number four team in the college football playoff. But, you know, now it's kind of interesting because I think in the new college football rankings, they only had Minnesota one spot above Penn State in the new rankings. Yeah. But, you know, Minnesota still, you know, has a little bit of work to do. They still have to play Iowa and Wisconsin in order to get to the Big Ten championship game, where they could potentially play Ohio State, which would kind of like decide who would win the Big Ten and probably get a spot in the college football playoff. But that's kind of like been, you know, Minnesota's first impressive win of the season. That is actually their first win over a ranked team this season. So I think, you know, that's what makes that kind of like an upset, is that you had Minnesota that was undefeated but didn't play any ranked team. And for them to, you know, go ahead and defeat Penn State, you know, that's, you know, pretty good coming from that team, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just saying about Franklin, though. Remember I was mentioning to I think I posted it to Callie Mike a few weeks ago. It was saying about USC, where USC will probably go after Franklin. I mean, Mike was saying they think that Franklin's done all right at Penn State. So do y'all think that Franklin might leave Penn State to go to USC?
I mean,
no, go ahead.
He would be more stable at Penn State than he would be at USC.
I agree. He hadn't really, he got Penn State there, but he hadn't really got them, you know, USC. I mean, that's California, you know, LA. I mean, they're going to expect bigger things. Penn State, he kind of got them there, but not there to that level yet.
I mean, he's, you know, had, you know, a few impressive seasons. I mean, I think, you know, he had that the Big Ten championship and, you know, other things like that, and, you know, being in the Rose Bowl and whatnot, but, you know, they just haven't had that one instance where they could be able to compete for a national championship. They always have one time where they stumble against a team that stops their momentum from trying to get into the college football playoff there with James Franklin as the head coach. But, you know, with him going to USC, they're going to expect some results and expect some results fast. Because they have the facilities, they have the backdrop, they have the recruit down pack, and they just want results out of that. And you know, I just don't think that James Franklin will be able to get something like that, especially with that kind of a, you know, a fast turnaround, which is what people in you know, Los Angeles will expect is a quick turnaround.
Yeah. Like I said, go ahead, Sean.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm gonna watch this Lakers Warriors game. But I think you guys are doing a great job. I think you guys are doing a great job. Interesting. I just want to share my thoughts in regards to the quarterback situation in Chicago.
Yeah.
But you guys keep doing what you're doing, man. It's a great job, man.
Appreciate it, buddy.
All right, no problem, man. Appreciate it.
All right.
Peace. So,
I was gonna say, like, I mean, like the Saints situation, I guess, you know, a fit and stuff like that, like Willie Taggart, you know. I mean, it's just
the same situation
in business,
yeah,
and sometimes
exactly.
It's just not
exactly.
A fit. How Florida State just let him go. Sometimes you got to look at it being a fit. Like now, he kind of wishes looking at going back and staying at Oregon, because Oregon still got one loss, and that could
yeah,
have still been the program he's been
loss.
At. You
yeah,
know what I'm saying?
But,
being
I mean,
there, so
the
now.
Thing, but the thing about it is that, I mean, I think with Taggart, I think that being at Florida State was probably his end game. That
yeah,
he just wanted
at
to,
this point.
You know, be there. You know, from basically from where he was at USF, because he didn't, you know, he had built that. You know, built that program over at, you know, USF, and then, you know, just tried to, you know, get to a bigger, you know, bigger school, a much bigger school than USF. I mean, Oregon looks like, you know, they would be that type of team with, you know, of course, Phil Knight behind them, Nike and everything like that, but you know, going over the finances and total revenue things for 2017 and 2018, Oregon is only ranked 26 compared to Florida State, who is ranked 8th.
And Florida State facilities, though, they were talking about them. And that's why Jimbo left. Their facilities is still not up to par, though.
Well, facilities may not be up to par, but Jimbo Fisher wasn't really controlling the players at Florida State all too well. And we know the story with never famous Jameis. But the other thing was, like, a lot of the players were kind of like the same thing, getting into a lot of trouble and, you know, still getting bailed out, still being a part of the team, not being disciplined for the actions that they were doing. So they just kept doing, you know, what they were doing. And, you know, when, you know, Jimbo Fisher kind of saw all of that and couldn't really control it, then he kind of like bailed out. So what's kind of interesting is that he bailed out and Florida State, at least not for now, has not, you know, been in trouble for it, you know, like a lot of these other schools are. And so what you had with, you know, my boy Willie Taggart is, you bring him in there and he tries to clean it up. He tries to, you know, make things right or whatever it is and, you know, make it a process. And they didn't give him a chance in that process. It wasn't like Florida State was doing great, you know, before Jimbo Fisher left. They had a struggling season, you know, when Jimbo Fisher left. And they didn't get anybody to kind of like make the program better overall. A lot of the guys that are in there at Florida State are pretty much Jimbo's guys. So you're basically keeping those guys in there because they're upperclassmen. They're the ones that are, you know, juniors and seniors and redshirt sophomores, but they're not, you know, filling out to what they're supposed to do. So
that's a good point right there, because this was only like really didn't even finish the second season. So we all know it really takes
you know,
four years.
There was, you know, Cam Akers pretty much on offense, They brought in Hornibrook from Wisconsin, but I mean, what else, you know, you had out there, you know, because Blackman was not the guy. And they knew that after Francois got injured in the Alabama game. I'm like, Blackman is not the guy. They should have looked for somebody else when they saw that Blackman was, you know, not performing well in that particular season. You know what I mean? So that's kind of, you know, what the situation was mainly there at Florida State, that, you know, they couldn't, you know, have a solution at quarterback. That was one issue. They never shored up the issues on the offensive line. And, you know, right now they're pretty much a patch job on the offensive line. And these receivers, you know, Keith Gavins and Tamarian Terry's and Treshawn Harrison's, they're not, you know, filling out, what they're supposed to, you know, fill out as. So that's kind of like what you got out there right now at Florida State. So I'm thinking that it's going to be like this for a while, regardless of who they pick up, because, you know, who they got there right now as the, as the interim coach, Odell Higgins. Higgins is a, you know, a defensive coordinator. He's a coordinator. He's not really a head coach. So they're not going to keep him as the head coach at Florida State. And, you know, Florida State ain't really like that as far as, like, keeping someone like him as the head coach anyway. So that's kind of like what they have there. And, you know, while Taggart has that large buyout, $17 million plus, my thing is, you have to allow a new head coach at minimum 3 years to kind of fully evaluate what they could do there at that particular program. And they didn't give, you know, Willie Taggart 2 full years. That's why I was very frustrated at the Florida State program and still upset about that Florida State program in reference to that. Because, you know, people were talking about, oh, well, they've been having Leonard Hamilton for all these years and whatnot. I'm like, the basketball, like, people pay attention to basketball on a much different level than they pay attention to football over there in Tallahassee. That's, you know, that's
exactly.
That is not even close. Not even close. You know what I mean? So that's
exactly.
Why I was upset about that one.
I feel like the Arkansas coach, they was talking about him getting fired. Of course, he got fired on Sunday, you know, Matt Morris. But, I mean, you got beat by Western Kentucky, and it was bad.
Yeah, they got beat by Western Kentucky. Yeah, they got slaughtered by Western Kentucky. That's,
you know,
that's completely different, you know, because Arkansas is not, you know, a program like a high-profile football program. They can't really do that much. They're in the SEC West when you have to compete with an Alabama and Auburn and an LSU at the least. And that's why I kind of like say, well, Jimbo Fisher gets this big contract over at Texas A&M, and Texas A&M has one of the biggest budgets in college football, and yet you can't, you know, be better than the third best team in your division, not even in your conference, but your division. And this is what they're paying Jimbo Fisher to do. I'm like, that's kind of like really, you know, messed up there. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, talk a little bit there about those, you know, topics in college football. Of course, you had that big game, LSU defeating Alabama, and then Penn State losing to Minnesota. Other results you had: Clemson winning 55-10 over NC State. Georgia shutting out Missouri 27-0. Oklahoma getting back on track, but had to weather a comeback by Iowa State, who failed on their two-point conversion to try to win the game. So they won 42-41. Not going to talk about the Florida Gators. They suck. Baylor stays undefeated, but it took them multiple overtimes in order for them to win 29-23 over TCU after having regulation in on a 9-9 tie. So there was that. And then two other games I wanted to go through. Wisconsin defeating Iowa in the Big Ten West 24-22. So that was a kind of a big win there for Wisconsin in order for them to, you know, try to keep pace there in the Big Ten West. And Kansas State, after having their big win over Oklahoma at home, goes on the road and loses to Texas in a chip shot field goal win by the Texas field goal kicker there, 27-24. So that's basically what they had.
Like back in theory with 3 years. Like look at my guy like at Herman, because this is Mike Herman's third year there too, right? Third or fourth year there in Texas, right?
Oh, Tom Herman, yeah.
I mean Tom Herman, that's his third year too. It was talking, man, maybe he wasn't the guy, but he had some impressive wins and, you know, kind of getting Texas back on track. So at least he got a fair shake. Cause I know there's probably people that was asking for his head.
Texas you do have that. And, of course, you know, we were talking about USC with Clay Helton. And the funny thing is like, you know, USC hasn't really had the, of course, the impressive record, overall record. But they're still in, you know, they're still competing there in the Pac-12 South. All they are one game behind Utah for that Pac-12 South division title. So Utah can't slip up, you know, because if they do, then USC would end up being the big Pac-12 South champ. So that's something there that you have with USC. I mean, they're 6-4, but, you know, they expect to be, you know, they expect to have like 9 wins or 10 wins by now, you know. So that's why a lot of the people within Southern California want Clay Helton out of there, because they expect to be the team that should, you know, not be losing to a Utah or like a Arizona State or something like that, like or losing to a BYU, you know, losing to a BYU. That's not what, you know, that's not what USC does. Getting blown out by Oregon is not usually what USC does. So that's kind of what they, you know, what they have here in that particular situation over in Southern California. So that's kind of like mostly what happened there for week 11. Just looking ahead to, you know, what's happening in week 12, let's say, you know, it's not really much of a active week other than the annual game between Georgia and Auburn, which will be at Auburn this season, with Georgia currently ranked fourth in the college football playoff rankings. So you have, you know, number 2 Ohio State, number 3 Clemson, number 4 Georgia there so far, and like I said, number 5 is Alabama. You know, Georgia facing Auburn at Auburn, that's going to be a pretty tough game for them. I mean, Georgia, you know, is they're ranked at number 4, but they haven't really been overly impressive you know, in this particular season, other than, I guess, you know, when they had their win over Florida. Because, you know, they had that close game against Notre Dame earlier in the season, and they stumbled against South Carolina in that overtime game. So, you know, while they were able to clean things up and get two shutouts, one against Kentucky and one against Missouri, they still have to, you know, show people that they could consistently have a complete game. So they got to be able to do that 2 weeks in a row. It's going to be tough to see if they'll be able to do it over in Auburn, going against the Auburn Tigers here, who, you know, have those two losses, but there's two losses against two ranked teams. So what do you think about that particular matchup between Georgia and Auburn? Are you there with a shutdown? Oh, I'm trying to check something out here.
I'm still here. I'm still here listening to you and shining in,
no,
James.
Oh yeah, I was seeing what you were saying about the that Georgia Auburn game that's coming up on Saturday.
Georgia, they gotta take care of business. I still like Georgia, man. I think they're gonna represent the East. I know it's a big one for Gus Malzahn.
The East, yeah.
I know it's gonna be a big one for Gus Malzahn because it was, you know, it was talk about, you know, folks wanting his head out, you know. So I don't know. You think this might be a deal breaker for Gus Malzahn?
I don't know, because I mean, you know, they had that season opening win against Oregon, but in a game where they had to, you know, basically win that in the last minute. And, you know, they've been, you know, floating around that with those two losses. And they're doing this with, like, a freshman quarterback. And I'm not sure, like, how their, you know, lineman situation is. But, you know, I think they've been kind of, like, trying to make the, you know, most of what they got there. Particularly with this offensive lineup where they have like four wide receivers, they don't really necessarily have like a tight end type of thing, unless if they, you know, want to put in Spencer Nye as their tight end. But they, you know, kind of like use a spread type offense, or, you know, like a power spread offense. Yeah. So you'd have like Spencer there as their, like, option halfback or tight end. So it's not like they, you know, fully use the tight end. They just had their five offensive linemen there up front. So that's kind of like what they, you know, what they got here with Bo Nix as their quarterback. A lot of experience there on offense, but, you know, a freshman quarterback that had to get himself familiar with the offense that Gus Malzahn basically runs. And I don't know if, well, at least here in this particular first year, that Bo Nix hasn't fully gotten what Gus Malzahn is trying to do with that particular offense. So, you know, that's kind of like what I get out of that. And I think that Georgia will be, you know, more familiar with their offense and what they need to do in order to get the win in this, you know, in this tough matchup against Auburn here. Trying to see the other, some other key games. You have on ABC, Oklahoma against Baylor in a key Big 12 matchup, with Oklahoma there at number 10, Baylor at number 13. Baylor undefeated, but Oklahoma the higher-rated team. It's something where you could either have Baylor get themselves to climb up a little bit more in those college football playoff rankings, or Oklahoma still be, you know, still is probably the favorite to win the Big 12. And could use this to, you know, try to get back into the college football playoff race there. So that's kind of like, you know, what they have as the primetime game for ABC. Fox has on primetime UCLA at Utah, which, you know, I don't see that as a pretty impressive game. But Minnesota is coming off that impressive win against Penn State. They will be at Iowa, which is, you know, always a tough little game for visitors to Kinnick Stadium. So I'm probably going to be on the lookout for that particular matchup on Fox to see how that turns out. So that's, you know, kind of like what we have on slate for college football in this particular week. See if we'll be able to enjoy those games and, you know, see what comes out of it. If there's going to be even more upsets there in college football before the end of the regular season gets through. So that kind of covers, you know, what we have out there for college football. Anything that you wanted to touch on, Mike?
You said right there, I'm just listening. Like, everything sounded good with me. Thought about what I was saying with Clemson, though. I want to see how they're going to keep, how they're going to hold it down. All that hype on Lawrence, I mean, he, you know, delivered, but I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to be going to New York for the Heisman this year. So,
He's
not even a chance, though. He really didn't have the year we all thought he was. So, it's interesting to see what them.
Well, I mean, you got, like, you know, Joe Burrow, that, like I said, has been the most impressive guy this season, and Justin Fields there at Ohio State. But also, and here's another topic there at college football, is their, you know, their top guy on the defensive side of the ball, Chase Young. Of course, he was featured in one of those primetime games on ABC when they played Wisconsin, with him getting, I think it was like four or five sacks. One of them was forced the turnover, you know, for Ohio State. And he was, you know, he has been very impressive over the course of the season. But, you know, the news was up to, you know, this particular point was that he could be potentially suspended for 4 games due to him taking some, I think it was like a loan from someone. So they were seeing if that was like a, you know, like a violation. But, you know, from what I'm hearing is that, you know, that situation, you know, pretty much is cleared up. And that, well, if he's not going to be suspended for 4 games, but it'll end up being 1 game. Basically 2 total games, because he was not playing in the game against Maryland, and he will be not playing in Saturday's game against Rutgers. He did say that he did receive a loan last year, but did repay that loan in full. So they said that, you know, with that being said, he's, you know, suspended for 2 games total, and then we'll be back after that. So kind of like goes into the whole thing with college football players and how they receive benefits or other monetary compensation. And, you know, that kind of like follows up with the NCAA making that ruling that college players can receive funds for anyone using their image, likeness, or name, or anything like that there. So that was kind of like a little bit of a step forward for college football players to actually get money while, you know, all these other parties were able to get money for college football players for years, and the players can't even get much out of that at all. They couldn't even, you know, get benefits from, you know, bowl committees when they're able to participate in the bowl. So that kind of like is a very weird situation how they used to handle stuff when it comes to benefits or getting gifts and things like that. But now that's going to slowly phase itself out of the window right there. But now I'm going to go into the news in the National Football League. You had two games going on the night games, of course, Sunday night, Vikings versus Cowboys, and then on Monday night you had the game between the Seahawks and the 49ers. With that thing that happened between the Vikings and the Cowboys, Vikings were able to get the win 28-24 against the Cowboys. They're going to 7-3 and having the Cowboys fall to 5-4. And, you know, for me, I kind of like put this as another instance where the Dallas Cowboys could not defeat a team that is looked to be at the top or near the top of a division. And for many fans of the Dallas Cowboys that are, you know, very delusional and say that the Cowboys have the potential to make it to the Super Bowl this year, or they say that every year, or they say Super Bowl or bust. And I'm like, look, Dallas Cowboys cannot compete for a Super Bowl spot if they can't defeat teams that are good or very good. This showed when they lost to the Saints. It showed when they lost to the Packers. And here again, it shows when they lose to the Vikings. And this is the second loss at home to a team, you know, that's in that NFC North, as they lost to the Packers, like I was mentioning earlier. So that is, you know, kind of like what I see, you know, out of this is that, you know, you have these guys on offense, Dak Prescott and the Amari Coopers and the Ezekiel Elliott. But if you can't put it all together and make it to be like an offense that's nearly unstoppable, then you're not going to be able to defeat these teams come playoff time. You're not going to be able to defeat a Seattle Seahawks. You're not going to be able to defeat Green Bay Packers or, you know, San Francisco or Minnesota or anybody like that. If you can't put your offense together to score points when you should be able to score those points. So that's what I got there mostly out of that particular game. And then Monday night was the big game between the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. 49ers were coming in there 8-0, and then having this game against the Seahawks, who came in there at 7-2. And if the 49ers were able to get this win, they would pull, you know, a little bit further away from the Seahawks, and they would raise more eyebrows to say, oh, okay, maybe this 49ers team is real serious this season. But they had trailed 21-10 to the Seahawks after the third quarter, and then had to, you know, come back to tie the game up at 24. But then the Seahawks were able to get a field goal from Jason Myers for 42 yards out. After, you know, Chase McLaughlin on the other side missed the field goal. So you had the Seahawks give the 49ers their first loss, 27-24. And that just, you know, has the 49ers. I mean, they had their first loss of the season, but with it being against the Seahawks and it being at home to the Seahawks, that just makes them, you know, not necessarily, really the clear cut team to come out of the NFC West. You still have, the yeah, the Rams that are starting to, you know, get themselves together a little bit, you know, semi there a little bit, except for their previous, you know, weekend here where they lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were only able to score 12 points against the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road. So, you know, they had like a little thing where they were trying to clean things up with a couple of wins, but then end up losing to the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is a key, you know, that was a key loss there. And now they have a big game coming up, Chi-Town, against your Chicago Bears on Sunday Night Football. So that is, you know, part of the things that we have here on the NFL scene. I think there was a couple of things that I wanted to cover. One was the upset by the Miami Dolphins over the Indianapolis Colts, being able to defeat them 16-12, holding them to just 12 points. And then second, you know, in that last drive for the Indianapolis Colts, they had that fourth down, and Miami Dolphins were able to stop them on fourth down as the Colts inexplicably called a play with a tight end, I think, going across the middle, and he wasn't even close to the first down marker. So I don't know why they made that play call there. So you do have that. The Buccaneers, they won against the Cardinals, which they shouldn't have. Let me see. What else was up there? Jets defeating the Giants 34-27, which was interesting there. And another upset, and this was a really big upset here. The 1-7 Falcons defeated the 7-1 Saints 26-9 at New Orleans. And that, I thought that was crazy that the New Orleans Saints couldn't score a touchdown against the Atlanta Falcons with Drew Brees there, you know, doing what he was doing, and they still couldn't get, more than 10 points against the Atlanta Falcons there. And then you also had the Titans defeat the Chiefs 35-32. So a lot of action that happened there in the National Football League, including, you know, the Raiders defeating the Chargers on Thursday night, and the Bears getting the win over the Lions at home, 20-13. You know, even though we had the whole talk about Mitch Trubisky, I mean, they were still able to get a win this week there, Chi-Town. In Chi-Town, any thoughts on the Bears' win over the Lions this week, this past weekend? Seeing that able to reach Chi-Town here at this particular moment, let's see if we could get him back here after a bit. Going to, you know, look ahead to what's happening on week 11 in the NFL, starting off with the Thursday night game that will be on Fox. It'll be the Pittsburgh Steelers going up against the Cleveland Browns. Of course, Cleveland Browns has been a fairly disappointing team this year, right, being at 3-6. They can't really afford another loss, they'd kind of be knocked out of the playoff contention there. So they definitely need to get this win against Pittsburgh Steelers. But the Sunday slate includes the Cowboys against the Lions. Jaguars are on the road against the Colts. You have the Bills against the Dolphins. Broncos will be going to Minnesota to face the Vikings. The Saints will play the Buccaneers in Tampa. Then you have, oh my goodness, You have the Jets against the Redskins. Oh, man, that's horrible. Something's got to give. The Jets are winless on the road, and the Redskins are winless at home. So something's got to give. You also have the Falcons against the Panthers. Ooh. Now, this is a good – oh, this is going to be a great one. 1 o'clock on CBS. The Texans against the Ravens. So, you're going to have Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson going against each other in that particular matchup. So, looking forward to that one. In the 4 o'clock games, you have the Cardinals against the 49ers, Bengals against the Raiders. Man, the Raiders could be 6-4. Oh man, they could be 6-4 through 10 games. That's pretty good for the Oakland Raiders there. And then 425 on CBS is also pretty much a key game between the Patriots and the Eagles. The Eagles want to keep pace with the NFC East. They're gonna have to figure out a way to try to get through this particular game against the Patriots. So that's, you know, what we have there so far in the afternoon games. And we did talk about the Sunday night game that will be the Bears against the Rams. And then on Monday night, it'll be the Chiefs against the Chargers. So that is what the schedule has there on slate for week 11 in the National Football League. I think we're going to be kind of like seeing a couple of those key matchups there. Like I said, Texans versus the Ravens is probably the best game that they have on slate for the weekend. And I think a lot of people are going to be watching that Steelers-Browns matchup to see what happens with the Cleveland Browns. So that is, what we got there in the National Football League. I think we're, going to see what happens as far as, like, a couple of those key games. Of course, going to be looking at that Cowboys-Lions game to see if Cowboys could bounce back from that tough loss at home. Also, the Saints, seeing if they could bounce back from that tough loss at home they had against the Atlanta Falcons. So that's mainly what we have there in this particular week in the NFL. That's kind of like mostly what I have in reference to the National Football League. I was seeing if Chi-Town had anything to say about that Bears-Rams game that's going to be on NBC on Sunday night. I thought the Rams kind of like got things together from a couple of weeks ago, but then, turned around and lost to the Steelers 17-12. This is supposed to be a team that has, one of the high-profile offenses in the National Football League, and it hasn't seemed like they have completely clicked so far over this course of the season, and that is why they're in third place in the NFC West. I mean, this is a team that was a Super Bowl participant, and ever since now, they've kind of been playing 500 type ball. They've had, of course, they had that loss to the Buccaneers at home, having 55 points scored on them by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, man. Like, that doesn't make no sense at all. So that's one thing that, I feel that has to be explained is, why were they able to lose to a team like that? You know, when you have those type of you know, issues as far as like the defense allowing 55 points to, you know, a team like the Buccaneers, that should, you know, raise a red flag there for the Los Angeles Rams. But, you know, they kind of like shored that up a little bit, you know, in the past few weeks as far as like, you know, not letting NFL teams score more than 20 points over the past few weeks. But, you know, with the Steelers, they couldn't get their offense going against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So kind of like see that as a concern there for the future as they got, you know, these key games coming up. They got to play the Ravens. They got to play the Seahawks again. They're, you know, at the Cowboys and at the 49ers as part of their second half of the season. So they can't afford to, you know, be that far behind in the NFC West and also the NFC in general. I mean, this is, you know, not necessarily something where they can, you know, get through and be a playoff participant with a record of, you know, anything more than six losses. So let's see, like, what this conference standings thing is looking like here for the NFC. And I mean, they are there at 5-4, but there are a lot of teams that are 5-4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. So they'll be, you know, they'll be on the outside looking in because the Vikings have, you know, one of those wild card spots, and, you know, they still have to get past the Seahawks to get another wild card spot. So they got to see if they could close out impressively to, you know, either get a wild card spot or somehow win the NFC West there. Because right now they're not looking very impressive being the being last year's NFC champion that's right there. So that's what I got overall. Chi-Town, you have anything to add here? Looks like, you know, he was like listening off and on. But, you know, kind of like got mostly what I wanted to fit in within 90 minutes of the podcast. So, you know, generally have like a little bit of overtime here, but kind of like, you know, getting you know, pretty much getting into most of the content that I did get to within college football and through the NFL. So wanted to, like, bring in a close to this version of the Take This L Football Talk Show. Hopefully we'll be able to continue this next week, next Wednesday, pretty much on its regularly scheduled time. So just wanted to, you know, get this through and just close it out. So that's all we got for y'all, and we'll be able to, you know, catch y'all here later on. Peace out, everybody.
Remember Raymond Berry asked me if they hit hard, and I'll say very Paul Christian. but a young lady more is them I adore. They seem to always score. Ed Sprinkle, defensive end for those years. Gene Big Daddy Liston was the man to fear. You have Steve Van Buren and Otto Graham. Johnny United had the arm of a superman. We had Charlie Trippi and Gino Marquette. If you're searching for a champion, they're your best bet. Which I could quarterback like Johnny Lou Jack or even Sid Luckman, as a matter of fact. Do you remember Red Brains, the galloping ghost? He could do a 95 running coast to coast. You had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player, so swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Y.A. Tittle, Allie Madison, hey, I remember all those guys from back in the days. It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows. Weekend warriors toe to toe. Football, 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 football.